And this is Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio. Today is October 20th, 2014. It's 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It's 1 p.m. in the East Coast. And this is 8 p.m. in the Middle East. And today I'm here and we are on a new page in history that will start the real deal. And the real deal, it means that the world is suggesting all sort of things, and we need to take a page from history, learn it, and make sure that we know learned the lesson, and we're not going to repeat history mistakes, because we have no luxury of extra time. Everyone's life here is given by God, and we don't know how much we have, so we need to use it at the best of our ability. We have a beautiful world and we need to preserve it. And today I was thinking, what's going on? Why this whole chaos? And you know, many of the people in the news had the reflection that the politician got mad with America. And you know, because there are saying people that say some stuff that is misinterpreted. And one thing I want to tell everybody all around the globe, whoever listen, and I hope I have more than us, Doug, and I, listening. There is a very big issue about the cross-cultural understanding. People don't expect you to talk to them the way you are used to. They accept you to understand where they are standing, and when diplomat speaks to other nations or any other country or people, they need to understand that they have to bridge the gap. And I'll tell you an example. Not long ago, I spoke to one of the best, you know, advisor of to the president, Clinton, Hank Shenkov, and we were in a meeting in New York because I was asking his help. Because when you deal with foreign country, you want a really good guys and great guys to come along. And we were sitting on the table, and it was an Italian representative, and he wanted to give the Jewish people a letter of, you know, of reinforcement to tell them that the Berlusconi government is going to be on our side. And I was sitting in a very, very beautiful restaurant, and we were sitting, speaking all English, and the representative, the Italian representative to Berlusconi, was talking, and he was talking to Hank, and Hank looked at me, and I had to tell him what he's saying, and he was speaking English. And again, Hank is speaking to the representative looks at me, and he says, "What did he say?" And I'm translating. The translation between all is the important, and you need to have good people by your side always as a politician wherever you are that can translate to you what the really meaning of the words are. And last week, you know, John Kerry, the State Department guy that does everything in his power to help bridge and bring peace to the region, he said you know, in the Egypt conference or everywhere I was talking to the people, we were talking about the issue of, you know, of the Palestinian, and then they say, you can get ISIS control if you handle the peace agreement with Israel and Palestine. And every time, you know, somebody says, like, you know, the Palestinian deal conflict just give ISIS more power. And everybody got mad and insulted in Israel, said, you know, our conflict or the Jewish conflict is, you know, it's everlasting with the Arabs. It's nothing to embed ISIS or anybody else. And they really felt bad about it. And they felt like, you know, America maybe did not understand them. But the truth of the matter, John Kerry was saying something else. And I was looking around all, you know, all the posting in the network and all the media talked, and nobody really got what he said. He said something very specific. If ISIS is empowered by the Palestinian conflict, it means that the Palestinians are part of ISIS. if Benjamin Netanyahu says Hamas is ISIS, we say the Palestinians are using ISIS as their own guns. So if they're using this violence that threatens the stability of the free world, if they are using this way to encourage fighting and Islamization of all Europe, maybe we should take a look back who we are really dealing with. And if a doctor from Israel, from Ashkelon, is going to be a part of ISIS, that's really, really, really scary. Because that doctor was excellent. He was given the opportunity. He was giving everything in the humanity power to make his life better. It wasn't about his education. He got one. It wasn't about lifestyle. He was working in a very good hospital in the south. And he was incredible, they said. He was one of the best. And he chose to leave his life behind and go become a terrorist with ISIS and got killed. Poof. All his effort, all his life was managed, and his name now is in famous. So I tell you all, it's about if they really want to have peace. And we need to understand that humanity needs peace. It's about that the whole world is fighting. It's about those bad people that want to go to war again and again, and those people who want to have a life and proceed. So I think that John Kerry did not say anything wrong. He actually explained the whole thing very, very good. And I got it. And I'm very happy I got it, because I hope now that I said it, because I didn't say it before. Now other people will get it. So I want to introduce you to two things today. I want to tell you, to give you a lesson from the past and give you a little quotes or speech that President Reagan said. And it's very, very good. It's very covering. Of course, it's touching a part of history where Russia was still out of the loop, but now things are changed. So we can make it better. So I hope that we can listen to this video. It's a video, of course. It's this track of sound, and we can listen to President Reagan and understand what he had in mind then, and maybe we can start putting everything back to order and make it work. So, Doug, let's put Ronald Reagan on. I miss him so much.
My fellow Americans, today has been a day that should make us proud. It marked the end of the successful evacuation of PLO from Beirut, Lebanon. This peaceful step could never have been taken without the good offices of the United States, and especially the truly heroic work of a great American diplomat, Ambassador Philip Habib. Thanks to his efforts, I'm happy to announce that the U.S. Marine contingent helping to supervise the evacuation has accomplished its mission. Our young men should be out of Lebanon within 2 weeks. They, too, have served the cause of peace with distinction, and we can all be very proud of them. But the situation in Lebanon is only part of the overall problem of conflict in the Middle East. So, over the past 2 weeks, while events in Beirut dominated the front page, America was engaged in a quiet, behind-the-scenes effort to lay the groundwork for a broader peace in the region. For once, there were no premature leaks as U.S. diplomatic missions traveled to Mideast capitals, and I met here at home with a wide range of experts to map out an American peace initiative for the long-suffering peoples of the Middle East, Arab and Israeli alike. It seemed to me that with the agreement in Lebanon, we had an opportunity for a more far-reaching peace effort in the region, and I was determined to seize that moment. In the words of the scripture, the time had come to follow after the things which make for peace. Tonight, I want to report to you on the steps we've taken and the prospects they can open up for a just and lasting peace in the Middle East. America has long been committed to bringing peace to this troubled region. For more than a generation, successive United States administrations have endeavored to develop a fair and workable process that could lead to a true and lasting Arab-Israeli peace. Our involvement in the search for Mideast peace is not a matter of preference. It's a moral imperative. The strategic importance of the region to the United States is well known, but our policy is motivated by more than strategic interests. We also have an irreversible commitment to the survival and territorial integrity of friendly states. Nor can we ignore the fact that the well-being of much of the world's economy is tied to stability in the strife-torn Middle East. Finally, our traditional humanitarian concerns dictated a continuing effort to peacefully resolve conflicts. When our administration assumed office in January of 1981, I decided that the general framework for our Middle East policy should follow the broad guidelines laid down by my predecessors. There were two basic issues we had to address. First, there was the strategic threat to the region posed by the Soviet Union and its surrogates, best demonstrated by the brutal war in Afghanistan. And second, the peace process between Israel and its Arab neighbors. With regard to the Soviet threat, we have strengthened our efforts to develop with our friends and allies a joint policy to deter the Soviets and their surrogates from further expansion in the region, and if necessary, to defend against it. With respect to the Arab-Israeli conflict, we've embraced the Camp David framework as the only way to proceed. We have also recognized, however, solving the Arab-Israeli conflict in and of itself cannot assure peace throughout a region as vast and troubled as the Middle East. Our first objective under the Camp David process was to ensure the successful fulfillment of the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty. This was achieved with the peaceful return of the Sinai to Egypt in April 1982. To accomplish this, we worked hard with our Egyptian and Israeli friends, and eventually with other friendly countries to create the multinational force which now operates in the Sinai. Throughout this period of difficult and time-consuming negotiations, we never lost sight of the next step of Camp David: autonomy talks to pave the way for permitting the Palestinian people to exercise their legitimate rights. However, owing to the tragic assassination of President Sadat and other crises in the area, it was not until January 1982 that we were able to make a major effort to renew these talks. Secretary of State Haig and Ambassador Fairbanks made three visits to Israel and Egypt early this year to pursue the autonomy talks. Considerable progress was made in developing the basic outline of an American approach which was to be presented to Egypt and Israel after April. The successful completion of Israel's withdrawal from Sinai and the courage shown on this occasion by Prime Minister Begin and President Mubarak in living up to their agreements convinced me the time had come for a new American policy to try to bridge the remaining differences between Egypt and Israel on the autonomy process. So, in May, I called for specific measures and a timetable for consultations with the governments of Egypt and Israel on the next steps in the peace process. However, before this effort could be launched, the conflict in Lebanon preempted our efforts. The autonomy talks were basically put on hold while we sought to untangle the parties in Lebanon and still the guns of war. The Lebanon war, tragic as it was, has left us with a new opportunity for Middle East peace. We must seize it now and bring peace to this troubled area so vital to world stability while there is still time. It was with this strong conviction that over a month ago, before the present negotiations in Beirut had been completed, I directed Secretary of State Shultz to again review our policy and to consult a wide range of outstanding Americans on the best ways to strengthen chances for peace in the Middle East. We have consulted with many of the officials who were historically involved in the process, with members of the Congress and with individuals from the private sector, and I have held extensive consultations with my own advisors on the principles that I will outline to you tonight. The evacuation of the PLO from Beirut is now complete, and we can now help the Lebanese to rebuild their war-torn country. We owe it to ourselves and to posterity to move quickly to build upon this achievement. A stable and revived Lebanon is essential to all our hopes for peace in the region. The people of Lebanon deserve the best efforts of the international community to turn the nightmares of the past several years into a new dawn of hope. But the opportunities for peace in the Middle East do not begin and end in Lebanon. As we help Lebanon rebuild, we must also move to resolve the root causes of conflict between Arabs and Israelis. The war in Lebanon has demonstrated many things, but two consequences are key to the peace process. First, the military losses of the PLO have not diminished the yearning of the Palestinian people for a just solution of their claims. And second, while Israel's military successes in Lebanon have demonstrated that its armed forces are second to none in the region, they alone cannot bring just and lasting peace to Israel and her neighbors. The question now is how to reconcile Israel's legitimate security concerns with the legitimate rights of the Palestinians. And that answer can only come at the negotiating table. Each party must recognize that the outcome must be acceptable to all, and the true peace will require compromises by all. So tonight, I'm calling for a fresh start. This is the moment for all those directly concerned to get involved or lend their support to a workable basis for peace. The Camp David Agreement remains the foundation of our policy. Its language provides all parties with the leeway they need for successful negotiations. I call on Israel to make clear that the security for which she yearns can only be achieved through genuine peace, a peace requiring magnanimity, vision, and courage. I call on the Palestinian people to recognize that their own political aspirations are inextricably bound to recognition of Israel's right to a secure future. And I call on the Arab states to accept the reality of Israel and the reality that peace and justice are to be gained only through hard, fair, direct negotiation. In making these calls upon others, I recognize that the United States has a special responsibility. No other nation is in a position to deal with the key parties to the conflict on the basis of trust and reliability. The time has come for a new realism on the part of all the peoples of the Middle East. The state of Israel is an accomplished fact. It deserves unchallenged legitimacy within the community of nations. But Israel's legitimacy has thus far been recognized by too few countries and has been denied by every Arab state except Egypt. Israel exists. It has a right to exist in peace behind secure and defensible borders, and it has a right to demand of its neighbors that they recognize those facts. I have personally followed and supported Israel's heroic struggle for survival ever since the founding of the State of Israel 34 years ago. In the pre-1967 borders, Israel was barely 10 miles wide at its narrowest point. The bulk of Israel's population lived within artillery range of hostile Arab armies. I am not about to ask Israel to live that way again. The war in Lebanon has demonstrated another reality in the region. The departure of the Palestinians from Beirut dramatizes more than ever the homelessness of the Palestinian people. Palestinians feel strongly that their cause is more than a question of refugees. I agree. The Camp David Agreement recognized that fact when it spoke of the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people and their just requirements. For peace to endure, it must involve all those who have been most deeply affected by the conflict. Only through broader participation in the peace process, most immediately by Jordan and by the Palestinians, will Israel be able to rest confident in the knowledge that its security and integrity will be respected by its neighbors. Only through the process of negotiation can all the nations of the Middle East achieve a secure peace. These, then, are our general goals. What are the specific new American positions, and why are we taking them? In the Camp David talks thus far, both Israel and Egypt have felt free to express openly their views as to what the outcome should be. Understandably, their views have differed on many points. The United States has thus far sought to play the role of mediator. We have avoided public comment on the key issues. We have always recognized and continue to recognize that only the voluntary agreement of those parties most directly involved in the conflict can provide an enduring solution. But it's become evident to me that some clearer sense of America's position on the key issues is necessary to encourage wider support for the peace process. First, as outlined in the Camp David Accords, there must be a period of time during which the Palestinian inhabitants of the West Bank and Gaza will have full autonomy over their own affairs. Due consideration must be given to the principle of self-government by the inhabitants of the territories and to the legitimate security concerns of the parties involved. The purpose of the 5-year period of transition, which would begin after free elections for a self-governing Palestinian authority, is to prove to the Palestinians that they can run their own affairs and that such Palestinian autonomy poses no threat to Israel's security. The United States will not support the use of any additional land for the purpose of settlements during the transitional period. Indeed, the immediate adoption of a settlement freeze by Israel, more than any other action, could create the confidence needed for wider participation in these talks. Further settlement activity is in no way necessary for the security of Israel and only diminishes the confidence of the Arabs that a final outcome can be freely and fairly negotiated. I want to make the American position well understood. The purpose of this transitional period is the peaceful and orderly transfer of authority from Israel to the Palestinian inhabitants of the West Bank and Gaza. At the same time, such a transfer must not interfere with Israel's security requirements.
All right, we are back, and we listened to Ronald Reagan when he used to speak so much about the Middle East. It was 1982, of course, the Russians issue was in play, but now Russia is coming to show that she's playing right and she's allies. And last year, with the crisis that we had in Syria, they played a major role to dismantle all the chemical weapon from Syria, and that was a very, very good gesture and a goodwill for everybody to understand that she's back and she's playing, and by all means. So I wanted to bring to the show somebody very special, a guy that works his heart out in the State of Israel to help understand and communicate better to the world what Israel is all about. Is a friend, is a Christian, is a devoted Christian, is fantastic human being, and I'm so happy to have you here. Michael Gano, welcome to the show.
Morley, how are you doing? Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you good, sir. It's so good to have you.
It's good to talk to you. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Now, you visit Israel for some time, and you understand what is, security issue in Israel and how small it is. I want you to tell us, in your visits to Israel, how do you feel? Do you feel that Israel is big enough, to give more chunks of land to anybody, or we really, really need those pieces of land? Because it's really from example that people can understand.
Right. Let me say, first of all, if you don't mind me taking a minute or two and talking about what I do here, that would allow me to have, I may not be a PhD, but I don't think you need to be a PhD today to understand exactly what is happening here. But I moved to Israel 2 years ago after working in politics for 12 years, and I lived in Washington, D.C., and I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any contacts, and I'd given away everything that I owned in the States and came here with $600 in my pocket and a one-way ticket. And 6 months later, I have a radio show called Insight to Israel and a program called Hershey's for Heroes, where Americans are sending thousands of Hershey's chocolate bars with a note on them to the soldiers of encouragement. We love you. We pray for you. We stand with you. With that being said, I've traveled all over this country. I spend a lot of time with the military here. And I just received an endorsement from a former member of the Knesset. And I have a lot of contacts in the Likud party. I think that this government, regardless of what the world says, and the different factions that are in it, you have Arabs in the Knesset. You have Christians in the Knesset, you have and Jews in the Knesset. So you have you definitely have a wide diversity of voices here in Israel that are citizens of this country, and everyone that's not Jewish, many times and I'm going to get to my point if you don't mind me saying, Orly.
Of course.
What a lot of people don't realize about this country is people that are not Jewish have more rights in this country through an affirmative action style law than the Jewish people themselves. I say that with regard to the fact that the Jewish kids go off to the military or they do national service if they're religious and aren't going to do the military. They have the secondary option of doing national service either here in Israel or in another country. That national service consists of things like helping the elderly, dealing with people that are infirmed or have debilitating diseases, even doing volunteer work like giving out food and medical aid. And that's outside of Israel. In Israel, it's kind of along the same lines, even working in schools. So while these young people defend their country, while the rest of the world, the Muslim world, calls for its destruction, they're not going off to college. They're not taking the LSAT or the ACT or the SAT. I don't even know if they give ACT anymore. But anyway, they're going straight into the military. Now, having traveled the country and knowing, spend the time with the military that I have, and especially down during the last operation on the Gaza border back in July and August, and then traveling the country and knowing the people as boots on the ground, this country cannot afford to give away land. I listened to the speech given by Ronald Reagan, and I have to say that I totally disagree with Reagan as much as I respected him as a president of the United States, because what the world is not looking at and refuses to accept and ignores intentionally is the fact that groups like Fatah, Hamas, and the Palestinian Authority all receive funding from Muslim countries that call for the death of the Jewish state. They receive a lot of goods from these countries. They receive weapons from these countries. And in their charters, they all call for the death, not a two-state solution, but they call for the death and destruction of the Jewish state. And so to give up land, as Ronald Reagan suggested, he almost suggested pre-67 borders. But the intent of the leadership in the Gaza and in Judea and Samaria, it's otherwise known as the West Bank, I call it Judea and Samaria, the intent of this leadership is not for peace. Everyone here knows it, but it's for the destruction of the Jewish state. And even if that takes a little bit of land at a time, they're calling for East Jerusalem. They're calling for sovereignty in the Judea and Samaria and in the Gaza. And so now it's those portions of Israel today, yet it'll be more tomorrow.
Of course, and I put Ronald Reagan because it was easy for us to track the line of history to see how things were then and how their reality is really different. The reality of the Palestinian people in Gaza is really different. Anybody who can see that, you know, what happened there, they know that they just declared that they are gonna build tunnels again to destroy Israel after they just got summoned all the Arabs world to get them some money to fund them, and which is ludicrous for anybody to give them any penny if they're announcing that they're gonna create other tunnels. So the reality of today is that the Palestinian got Gaza, and whatever they did with this is terror. So how are we going to ever trust them again with giving them any silch? I don't think so. And about Jerusalem, you know, the Jerusalem is a city of God. It's a city of holy to all religion. Everybody needs to come and feel united under one place. And to give it to some terrorist organization that put flags on Temple Mount of Hamas and all the, black flags that you don't want even to mention here, I think that it's not a reality that they are looking for a peaceful agreement. They are calling for destruction. But now they got appetite. Now they want a caliphate for all the world. They want the Islamic world. So Israel is only in the front page of this conflict. But the truth of the matter, Israel represents what they are trying to threat. And the rest of the world has to come to play and understand that this is the difference between freedom and liberty and being under, Islamization of the rest of the world. So that's my opinion. We need to consider that, Israel is a part of the allies, and I can understand why she's not at this point. But she's taking very, very strong stand for humanity, and we need to give her a play in this one. As far as Michael, you've been doing such a great job in Israel, encouraging the soldiers, giving them Hershey's from all over America with the Blessed American Christian, that, Andrews, of course, that come and send you all this Hershey, and I hope that you get the opportunity to give more of them, because we need you here. We bless everything you do. And your perspective is really, really important, because you know how tiny the land is. And small as it is, you cannot give up a zilch. I would say that we need more, more land. President Paris used to say we're geographically, not capable to do that. We're not able to do that. But the truth of the matter is, you give control to whoever can arrange and control places and organize people, not to destroy. They took Gaza and destroy it. We are trying to save Judea and Samaria, because Judea and Samaria is the mountain ridge for over Israel, and we have some video to talk about it later. But tell me, Michael, so from your perspective, is that something that's going to be solved anytime soon, or we are going to have another round?
You there?
Yes, I'm here, sweetie.
Okay, I'm sorry. We got disconnected a little bit. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I spoke.
I didn't hear the question you asked me.
I'm asking you, after being in this last campaign in Gaza, when they kidnapped and killed three teenagers from their school, they didn't go back. They went to school and they didn't get back home, and a whole world went crazy. Now we're in ceasefire and everybody's calling for talks. What do you think? Are they ready to, surrender, or they have more appetite for more fighting?
Let me tell you what I think is going to happen, Orly. First of all, it's amazing because what a lot of the media didn't tell, and I actually, when those boys were kidnapped, I spent 2 weeks in Hebron with the soldiers there. And, they found over 300 Hamas terrorists, and I call them the militant arm of Islam. And they found over 300 of these guys there that had been released under Gilad Shalit, who was the soldier that was kidnapped several years ago. And they did a trade-off of releasing prisoners, Muslim prisoners, for this one soldier. Now, what I think is going to happen is, as I look at the global scale, this is not about Hamas. This is not about the Palestinians. We have to look at this through two portholes, through the porthole of Israel, and then we have to step back from the world and look at it through the scope and porthole of the world as a whole. Because Hamas, the Palestinians, and Fatah are all being funded, as I stated previously, by Islamic groups and Islamic countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, all over the world. Even Muslims in Europe fund Hamas, Fatah, and the Palestinian Authority. What I think is going to happen is the United States, in the research that I found, and Americans need to be very aware of this that are listening, because these are Democrats and Republicans. I've done the research. I've made the phone calls to the Senate Foreign Arms Committee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We are funding billions, hundreds of billions of dollars written off by Democrats and Republicans alike to train and arm and give continued finance to Muslim countries, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, all these countries to call for the death of the Jewish state, or they fund terrorism around the world, or special interest groups, Islamic interest groups in the United States, which undermine and through the media Israel's sovereignty and security. What I see happening is Daesh or ISIS or Islamic State is Turkey is waiting for the Kurds to be killed. Erdogan is going to step across the Turkish border with one foot into Syria. Daesh is going to step across with one foot into the Turkish, over the Turkish border with one foot in Syria. They're going to shake hands and they're going to welcome each other. I say that because, and along with this, I believe we're going to see and we've already started to see a coalition between Hezbollah and ISIS based on this fact. Hezbollah has a very strong, very well-trained military, and they don't want a civil war. They can't afford it. So the biggest enemy is Israel. And if you've watched, in July and August, we had little skirmishes. Rockets come across the border. We just had one last month come across the border. And I believe that's just a test, a taste of what we're about to experience in the north of Israel and the Syrian-Lebanon border. What I think is going to happen, the United States is going to push Israel, the government, not the people. The people of the United States love this country. But the U.S. government is going to push it to the table and force them. And now, will Israel do that? That's up to Bibi. That's a decision for him to make. I can't tell you what he's going to do. I can only tell you what the enemies of Israel are going to do. They're going to push Israel to the table. And what happens is, Islam is outside of Israel, incites Islam on the inside of Israel. We're seeing this now in an area called Arman HaTziv, where I used to live, where now the residents are afraid to come out of their home because they're being threatened by the Muslims there. Many of those Muslims are citizens. I believe that it's only a matter of time. Look, if Hamas is this open about rebuilding tunnels, if they're this forthright about it, and the Palestinian Authority does nothing but do a bunch of talk and say we don't condone it, talk doesn't mean anything anymore. And what I believe is that Hamas is going to wait for the right time, and the Palestinian Authority is going to wait for the right time for outside, Muslims on the outside, to and I think that Israel is going to face a lot of turmoil, continued turmoil, even more on the inside for the Muslims that are citizens of this country, and in Judea and Samaria, your everyday citizen, and then those in the Gaza.
Absolutely, and in Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, it's every day is a riot. People don't know about it, don't hear it. CNN never reported, even Fox News, they're all absent, they're all MIA. Everybody, the news people of the world are missing in action for the reality, because what happens in East Jerusalem, what happened in the holiest and all of the world is incredible. They are stoning people, they're threatening them, and people are just don't know about it. And you know, we get report every day from the, you know, from people visiting the Temple Mount, and God forbid, it's the start of something, and if we don't stop them, it's very bad, because Jerusalem needs to be surrounded by security. Surrounded and not had the tunnels underneath the mountain top, and bringing terrorists through and out from Gaza and the rest of the Arab world. Michael, we're running out of time. It's always good talking to you. I hope you come on the show again to see how we progress. But I'm really thankful for you and for your insight to Israel. And I hope that everybody will send Hershey for Hero. Go to his page, Michael Ganot, Hershey for Hero. Can you give us your page so everybody knows?
Yeah, if you go to Facebook and just type in Hirsch for Hers, you'll find it. And look, I want to say this. Some people can mistake, Orly, what I said as a negative. This is reality that we live in here. But at the end of the day, all of the world is God's creation, but this is God's land, and it will never be overrun.
Absolutely. Hallelujah. Thank you so much. We love you. We love you. We love all our friends in America that sent the Hirsch for Hero and all the rest of the good Christian that support us. Thank you so much. Thank you for everybody. Thank you, Michael. And let's go to a break.
Hey, thank you.
And we are back. And yes, that was a big roar that we had with Michael Ganeau. And the roar is that, you know, people of the world, wake up. This is not about Israel. It's not about you guys. It's everybody's wonderful and lovely. It's about just the goons that are trying to take over the world. It's like the economy. They're trying to collapse us. And you know what? This time, it's not going to happen. It's not in the book. The destruction of this world, it's not going to happen anymore like they used to, the First and Second War. Whoever decided that there will be a third one, no siree. We are not going to let it happen, and we are going to overcome it together with patience, communication, unity of the world, brotherhood of men. We are going to stand against this. They took so much of our economy, they stole it, sent it elsewhere. And those on the top, God, I heard they're so greedy. You know, it's about time to start letting the people that work for you help them, give them what they need. It's impossible. People of the world need to start, you know, in progress. And I'm taking off on the economy now because there are so many, you know, voices that telling that the collapse of the American economy in 2016, 15. But I think that it's no. America is going to overcome it, and Israel is going to survive, and we're going to see a new day. And we're going to work together to make it happen. It's not going to be easy, but we're going to make it. And now I wanted to introduce you to a video that was learned in the studies in Jerusalem, in the center of, you know, the big think tank in Jerusalem, and Dory Gold is in charge there. It's spectacular list of people that belong there. And they just gave us what is security border for Israel means, what really, really Israel is all about, how tiny it is, and how we need more space. Don't take anything, and especially Jerusalem, we need to protect her. So, all right, so we are back, and it's really, really clear. The fact of the matter is that security is survival. If Israel has security, it can survive. It's not easy to tell the world, you know, hold on a second, we're not going to play, you know, the giving game again, but sometimes we don't have anything to give, so you have to settle for something else. We'll teach them something, you know, they can stick around and maybe they'll learn something, but the truth of the matter, negotiation will have to be stopped. Right now we want Jerusalem, and we want Jerusalem as a whole, one. So we want East Jerusalem. I don't know if people don't understand, but it's the protection for the holy site for everybody, for the whole world. This is the land of God, and we are custodian of it, and we are asking for Jerusalem, and we have a very good case for it, and we're going to do that. And next show, we're going to have a case for Jerusalem, God willing, so we can bring all what we learned in the past and what they say and what we can be done. And we have no problem with them praying on Temple Mount. We have nothing against prayer. We want everybody to pray. But let us be in peace and pray for God. God of Israel deserves recognition, and we love him. So I think that we're almost running out of time. Let's buzz to the last segment of, you know, a little music to take us off to a wonderful, wonderful week, to a wonderful start, to a week that you can make every day better than the previous one. Make your life beautiful. You are great. God created you, and you are blessed. So go be the best you can be. And thank you so much for being. And I hope that you can enjoy the show. And next time you're going to call on us or not, it's fine. I never advertise the number. But anybody who wants to talk to me, it's Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio. And I appreciate Doug so much for helping me through this. Thank you so much, and goodbye, and have a great, great week.